This is Rachel Mason, and you're listening to Improv Nerd with Jimmy Carain.
Jimmy Carain's a nerd. Jimmy Carain's an improv nerd. Jimmy Carain's a nerd.
Hey everybody, this is Jimmy Carain, and you're listening to another episode of Improv Nerd, sponsored by my award-winning improv classes here in Chicago, The Art of Slow Comedy. If you are ready to take your improvisation to the next level, or you are frustrated and you're looking for a new approach to your improv because you've been around for a long time, if you're craving that personal attention, then this class is for you. Art of Slow Comedy, The Fundamentals of Improv, starts Wednesday, January 7th at Green Shirt Studio. I limit my classes to 12 people, so you'll always get personal attention. All you have to do is go to my website, jimmycarain.com. Also, if your two-person scenes need a little tune-up, I am offering a two-person scene tune-up on January 3rd. It's a great gift to give you around the holidays to come in to 2015 getting some real good personal feedback and tuning up those two-person scenes, because they are the foundation of any long form you do, good two-person scenes. And for that, all you have to do is go to jimmycarain.com to sign up for that here in Chicago. Boy, do we have a show for you today. Our guest is Rachel Mason. She is the head of the Advanced Improvisation Program at the Second City Training Center here in Chicago. She is an accomplished improviser, performing with I.O., Baby Wants Candy, Second City. We talked to her about women's responsibility in improv. She is so passionate about this. Her working with Del Close and other people that she's learned from along the way, like Tina Fey, Amy Poehler, and Susan Messing. And my favorite part of this episode is how Rachel, and she is such a great improviser. She threw a curveball at me in the improv portion. And I'm not even going to give it away, but I just want to say how important it is to be thrown out of your comfort zone. And Rachel did such a beautiful job of that. And for me in this episode, what Rachel really reminded me of, and I do this in I do this on stage, and I really do it in my life, is I don't ever like to get out of my comfort zone. I am a creature of habit, and it's fear. And, you know, if you've been listening to Improv Nerd, I usually play a certain kind of character. And what she did here was she forced me out of my comfort zone. Now, the interesting thing is when you're out of your comfort zone, it's very uncomfortable, and that's why they call it your comfort zone. But also that you always feel like, oh, I didn't do well, I could have done better, all of that stuff. And it's really scary. For me, it's really scary. But it always has a residual effect. And it might not be the next show or two shows down the road, but you've stretched your canvas a little more. And you become a better improviser, you know? And I have to remember that in life, because I'm married to Lauren, who is the sweetest, kindest, most joyful person. And as you know, I don't have any of those qualities. And she'll say stuff like, oh, do you want to watch a movie tonight? And I'll be like, no, I just want to go to bed. And I've made an effort to really force myself to be like, okay, we'll watch The Making of Downton Abbey before we go to bed. It's only a half hour. But those experiences make me a better artist. They make me a better improviser. And I really think that they make me a little more of a better person. So enough of that. That seemed so kind of pretentious, but whatever. I know here's someone who's not pretentious, and that's Rachel Mason. So please enjoy the Rachel Mason episode.
Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd, oh yeah. Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd.
Grab my ass.
A little bit.
You are so naughty sometimes. I love that you're so naughty.
Thanks.
I love it. So we knew each other. You were head of the training center at I.O.
Mm-hmm.
And then you left.
Uh-huh.
And then from there, you told me that you took a job in advertising in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Did you feel at any point that, like, your life in comedy was over when you took that job in New York?
Mm-mm. Absolutely not. My goal, I entered that firm in finance, which was my background as a normal person. But my goal was to sort of eke my way over to creative, so that I could still use my left brain kind of thing. We produced It was a digital broadcasting group that a college friend of mine founded, Chris Young. He's an amazing, wonderful man. He's the good 1%. They're real. And they did branded content. So, like, you know, like some celebrity with a soft drink, like they would brand that and, you know, put the tags in and track it. It was like in-house everything. So we got to write the scripts and do the shoot. So it still felt very much a part of our entertainment world.
And I'm sure this is like more money than you ever made in improv, right?
Abso-fucking-lutely.
So then why'd you quit?
Well, the job was in New York, and I had a four-month-old in Chicago. So I was like FedExing breast milk home. And like,
is that true?
Yes. And like flying home every weekend and like going chemically insane without my kid. So I realized I could, like, while I wanted to do anything to support my family, like being away from my four-month-old, like crying into a pumping machine, like wasn't working. So I was at Second City. I came home to do something, and I'm like standing in the garage, and I'm crying. And Norm Holly is like, "Come home." So I did. He saved my life, probably.
And so Norm gives you like 5 or 6 classes.
Yeah.
And how did you feel about that?
I felt like I was home.
And why is Second City your home?
My first real paycheck was from Second City.
And what was that, the touring company?
I did almost every job at Second City, from like box office to production assistant, like coat check, like intern. I did everything there. And I dated a boy who was friends with the people and an MD for things, and they were doing a project and they needed somebody, so I went in. And I didn't get hired for Second City until like years after that, but like here and there I would get the occasional Patchco or Bizco or whatever, and I got in their system.
So you were doing, you did touring company for like 5 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
And never made a stage.
Mm-mm.
And but then when you go back to teach,
mm-hmm.
they give you something that you've never done, got an opportunity to do before, right? And that is to understudy the main stages.
Oh, no. I had been in two main stages and two ETCs as an understudy. I'd never been a part of a process, but I've performed on the main
process
stage in ETC.
A show. You've never put up a show.
Never actually put up a review, although I had put up other shows other places, which mm-hmm. is how I stayed in the Second City system.
Mm-hmm.
So like creating a sketch review out of improv is not something that I hadn't done before.
Mm-hmm.
I just hadn't done it on a Second City stage.
Mm-hmm. So you go back and you're teaching,
uh-huh.
And then you also auditioned for Mad TV like 6 times, right? SNL 5 times?
Yep.
And in the course of this, what was that like? I mean, you got relatively close, didn't you?
Well, I think getting in the room 5 times is pretty fucking good. I absolutely had a hot streak where they kept giving me a shot, you know, like, and to be on that list of the invite only or the call auditions, like to get in the room that many times is pretty fucking good.
And how do you deal with getting that close and then the disappointment of
you haven't lost anything you didn't have already? If you go into an audition like this is the thing that's going to change my life, as opposed to I'm not going to lose anything I didn't already not have. You're fine.
How have you made it? Because this is what I struggle with.
You're a terrible person.
I know that. I get that.
And I have joy.
I totally agree with you 100%. So let's break that down. How do you get joy?
How do I get joy?
Yes.
Well, first you have to do all the shit. You have to eat a lot of shit before you get joy.
And what does it mean to people that are listening to the podcast or in the audience to eat a lot of shit?
Your Harold team gets cut. You don't get the teacher you want. Your boyfriend gets something that you don't get. You get passed over for the main stage when you told your face you're getting the main stage.
Was that true?
Yes.
Tell me that story, because
no.
I
never
heard that. Yes.
Then all of a sudden you get to a place where you can do whatever you want. Like you've been around long enough and you've proven yourself that now you can pick the people you want to work with as opposed to like getting pigeonholed. And now I'm very lucky to teach classes that I wrote the curriculum for and do a show with the people I want to do a show with.
All right, let's talk about what's up. You don't want to talk about...
I don't care.
Do you want to talk about not getting the main stage?
So it was one of those things where it was like, you told me I was getting the main stage. And they were like, well, at the last second, we decided everyone knew you were going to get it. So we were going to do something different. And I was like, I really wish you hadn't said that to me. But that's eating shit. Like, if you want to work there, you're going to eat that shit sandwich.
And how long ago was that?
A long time ago.
So had you said fuck you to them, you wouldn't have been where you are today.
I think so. Like, you want to be the person that people want to work with. Like, get fired graciously. Right? Like, own it. Own the fuck, it wasn't my turn.
What did you learn from that?
To eat shit graciously.
And not create a scene.
Yeah. Squeaky wheel gets the grease is like a misconception. Grease is expensive and wheels get fucking replaced.
I think we have a quote there, Wes. Could someone check that out right now? So now you're the head of the Advanced Improv program at Second City.
Mm-hmm.
And what is your philosophy around teaching?
Well, I am very lucky to still perform. So when I am teaching like not out of a, like, this is what I like to see, but this is what I know works. And I try to, as an actor, performer, writer, director, try to give students, like, Susan calls it, like, shortcuts.
Susan Messing.
Yeah, like, we went through all this stuff so that I could boil it down to the one phrase that'll hopefully get you to the thing. And if I can do that with, like, if I can get you to have fun and learn a little something, like, that feels, like, that's my philosophy. Let's have some, like, serious, dumb, smart fun.
And what does that look like? Serious, dumb, smart fun?
So like, you know, Second City is social and political satire, right? So it's not just comedy, it's like, it's not funny, it's funny and, right? So that means like your hilarious two-person relationship scene where somebody's farting, but let's set it in Syria.
Okay.
Yeah. Right? Let's take a stab at something big while having a great stupid time.
Also, the other thing I've heard about your teaching style is you can be very direct.
Yes. But trust me that I try to cultivate a persona that is like, ah, that was fucking stupid. Do it again. Whereas if Gelman was like, that was fucking stupid, you'd be like,
you'd want to
kill yourself, right? So I try to, I always say, I'm a New Yorker and I'm direct and I want to build you up. So if I give you a note, it's just a note. I'm not shitting on you.
Tell me about this persona that you cultivate for
my
teaching.
My teaching persona?
Yeah, what is your teaching persona?
Tough New York I won't shit? Let you get away with shit. But if it's real good, I will let you play in that shit a little bit.
That's good to know, because when we get to improvise, because I love to pick up shit more than I love to play with it. Now.
So what I say, like, you're in a scene with somebody who's, like, not good, you know, like, that happens every once in a while, and I think, like, that's on you. Like, your scene partner is just somebody who makes different choices than you, right? And if your scene partner is shitting on you, your job isn't to put out like a Wile E. Coyote parasol. Your job is to pick the edible corn out of that shit so that you can make a great scene happen. It's not your scene partner is shitty. It's your imagination won't see that anything you want could still happen.
But what happens with those students? They're judging the other?
Yeah.
And yep. How do you get them to let go of that judgment?
Well, I talk about the heart, the head, and the X factor, the fact that I think there are three different kinds of improvisers with certain tendencies. There's the heart, who's physical, the head, who's verbal, and the X factor, who does whatever the fuck they want, right? And, you know, that, like, if you're on stage with an X factor who does this, it doesn't mean it's a bad move. It's just a move you wouldn't have done, right?
Right.
So, yes and that shit. Have some fun.
All right. Let's talk about when you were coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And I love talking about women in improv with you because it is like, it has got to be one of your biggest passions. Yes, don't downplay it, because when we were on the phone with the pre-interview,
So what I would say is, I would quote my friend Susan Messing and say, I've worked too hard to still be talking about this shit. Why is women in comedy still a fucking thing?
Well, there's a... Well, there's a, you're passionate about
it. Yes.
Okay. So when you were coming up, there's a couple things I want to talk about.
Yes.
One is, you were coming up, I think I was just kind of finishing at the I.O. It was like
I remember watching you in like Dwarf's House and Office Supplies. Like,
oh, really?
I used to go to the Annoyance and wherever, the Luna Lounge, wherever you put it up and see your shows.
Okay. So I was a little before you, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And then, because when I was at the I.O., it was in the 80s. If you
I associate you more with the Annoyance than I do the I.O.
Oh,
for some reason.
That's cool. And there's a lot of people that still remember me, even though I'm 50. It's like, oh, you're the guy from I'm 27, you know, which was a one-man show I did.
Yeah.
Thanks for not applauding.
Okay. You're a terrible person.
But when I was at the I.O., I'm a terrible person who has no joy. Get this out there, tweet, Jimmy is a terrible person with no joy, and give Rachel credit for that. Because I would never say something like that about myself. Never. Okay. So when I was at the I.O., there was, if you had one woman on your team, it was a big freaking deal.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's this renaissance period coming. Mm-hmm. And Tina Fey's there, Amy Poehler, Rachel Dratch, Stephanie Ware.
Mm-hmm. Laura Kraft, Jenna Jolovitz.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But there was a fear of women to study at I.O.
So they had to make their own fucking team. And Jane ended up kicking everybody's
okay,
ass.
Okay, so let's back up. What was the thing that prevented women to go to I.O.?
Patriarchy.
Meaning Dell.
So anybody read Christopher Hitchens? I don't mean Dell. I mean Sharna and Dell.
Okay.
So Christopher Hitchens basically said, like the tagline is women aren't funny. But what he really said is that women have to be differently funny pending what the patriarchy finds socially acceptable. And at the I.O., this like boys club of young white men were like, who do these girls think they are? And when Rachel and Tina came in, they were like, get over it. And it turns out they were just as good, if not better, and made room that like, oh shit, they're good, let's see who else. And then they would recommend somebody else, and they would recommend somebody else, and all of a sudden there were women everywhere. Because it turns out we can do it too.
So let me ask you this, because there's a Dell was quoted many times.
To your face, women are props and objects and girlfriends.
Right. But he would say, women aren't funny.
Nope.
Okay. Do you think he really meant that?
No. He thought I was hilarious.
Is that true?
Yes. I think he found my ferocity. Mm-hmm. And like, so my dad is a sort of an old, bearded, track-marked weirdo. So when Dell did that, like, Dell liked to scare people, and I wasn't afraid of him. Because he was like my dad. And I think he found that funny. Like, look at this little chick with brass balls. Like, I'm gonna indulge that. So we actually became friends.
But do you think when he said that, what did he really mean by that?
A product of his time. Like, like he tells that story about Joan Rivers ruining the whatever and the, like.
Tell us that story for people that.
Oh, God, it's like a famous Second City scene where he says something about, she says, he says, I'm leaving you, and she says, but I'm coming with you. Or he says, what about the children?
Yes.
What about the kids, right? And it was a complete denial, and he sort of hated that about her.
She said, I think we don't have kids, and she gets a big laugh.
Right. She says, I'm leaving you, and he says, but what about the kids? And she says, but we don't have kids. Right? Like, he's trying to make this grounded relationship scene, and she fucking goes for the bits, right? Yeah. And he was like, but that's not your role. You're supposed to be my subservient wife, as all women play in all Second City scenes prior to 1967.
So you just think it was just a time?
Yes,
okay.
I do.
You don't think he really meant it?
Well, maybe he liked to, like, maybe he was convincing himself he meant it, maybe his patriarchal residue. Maybe it was like a thing he could say to stir shit up.
Because he loved to shock people.
And not only would he say like women aren't funny, Dell had a way of being like, you two are funny, and the rest of you should kill yourselves. It wasn't like everyone could do this. He would go, everyone could do this to two people. And these people fell into two different camps. I'm gonna show them I'm good anyway. And, but what about me, right? And fuck all of those people. And these people went on to be great people. So, like, this hardcore, I'm going to scare you and only these two people are good, actually, I think, pulled the best out of these people over here. Like, that ranting and raving, that emotional thing, I think a lot of it was bravado.
Well, and I think you said something interesting to me probably in one of the interviews or when we worked together. Like Dell, today I don't think people would stand for it.
No.
Dell's class,
nope.
He would do 45 to 50 minutes of a monologue.
Yes.
Because he was cooped up in his apartment for a week.
Uh-huh.
And he hadn't had any social contact.
Uh-huh.
And this was his way of making contact
yes.
with people. And you said, like, that drove me insane. But you
I loved it.
And why did you love it?
Because this is a genius, like a mad genius. People would be like, we have no stage time. And I'd be like, I think we should listen to him. I think turn off your inner monologue and listen to what he's talking about. There was one time he did a rant for like 45 minutes about the Bay of Pigs. And I'm like, and then he goes, two people up. And we're all looking at each other like, what the fuck does he want? And in my brain, I'm like, okay, Khrushchev, communism, fascism. He's equating group mind to fascism. He wants us to do group work right now, like where we become one group mind. So I went on stage and I initiated something, and he went, yes, and then never said anything again for the rest of the class. It was very weird. Like, if you wanted to be successful, you had to do... Like, he was purposeful, but he was also, like, insane. So you had to decipher. And maybe I am insane. I was usually good at deciphering that thing.
So let me throw some names out. Tina Fey, what did you learn from her?
Tina was the smart one. Like, if Tina brought the content and the timing and the edge, like a smart edge.
Amy Poehler.
Big, ridiculous, no fear. For a beautiful girl like Sedaris, for a beautiful girl, she'd play the ugliest, weirdest character. She was the one who proved to me you could play with the boys.
Rachel Dratch.
I've never seen anyone silently command a room like she could. Like that quiet, wonderful, quirky character. Like Amy was big and Rachel could do that little like just playing a like recorder, she could steal the whole show. Plus, like she was the one with all the grace offstage too. She hung out with cool people and super cool boyfriends and like wasn't a fucking mess offstage.
Stephanie Weir.
Oh my God. So Stephanie Weir was like my hero. Like right next, her and Laura Kraft in an Armando, like I couldn't take my eyes off of them. And the very first touring company of the IO Roadshow was all these amazing, like my heroes and teachers and me. Like I got lucky. I had a good audition and I got on. And like this girl that I thought was incredible, like all of a sudden I'm getting to do scenes with her. So this is like practical FaceTime. I'm looking into her eyes and getting to learn from her in performance, which I think is invaluable. Like I think you learn on stage a lot. It's different than a classroom. She gave me that the stage chops.
Susan Messing.
I said this to you on the phone. Susan Messing taught me you can have it all.
Meaning?
You can have it all. You can be whatever you want, teach whatever you want, go wherever you want, say whatever the fuck you want, have a kid too without missing a beat in what you love to do.
Is she a mentor of yours? What is your relationship like?
She was my teacher. Mm-hmm. I had her for a class at IO, but then I handled my way up real quick, and then we ended up performing together, and now we're married.
Well, it's nice that Illinois recognizes
finally.
That. Finally.
Finally.
You're in a show with her, the boys.
Mm-hmm.
And this really ticks you off when they say, and you guys have won awards or whatever in the Reader or New City, the best female improv show.
Mm-hmm.
What pisses you off about that?
They don't call TJ and Dave the best male improv show. Right?
You also said to me that women in comedy is done, but race in comedy is not.
Mm-mm.
Can you explain that?
I teach lots of classes, 6 classes a session maybe, and like if you acknowledge that women are actually 52% of the population, like if you look around now, at least in my classes, maybe they're drawn to me because I am a lady teacher, I easily have 60-40, 50-50 men and women in my classes, right? And that is very inspiring to me. I'm used to being the only woman in the room, and now it's a woman teacher in front of a room of women, and there are two guys sitting there like, do I have to do a scene about tampons? I'm like, I have to do a scene about fantasy football, asshole.
Because the word on the street is, oh my God, if I get in Rachel's class, I'm going to have to do a scene about tampons.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
A lot of people prepare a tampon scene before they get to your class.
And well, I mean, clearly, as evidenced by Ferguson and the Arab Spring and America's reaction to anything, we just don't know how to deal with melanin yet.
It really ticks you off, doesn't it?
Yes. Yes. Everyone should play. Everyone should get to play. And if I have to watch another white student call their black student... their black scene partner Jamal, or like worry, like or Laquita, when it could just be Steve or Laura,
What is going to change that?
I don't know. This, talking about it, making it happen. Well, like I say to men, you're going to call me honey before you call me doctor. Don't do that. Call me doctor. The next time you see a black kid on stage, don't call him homie. Call him Colonel.
There, we got some more quotes, Wes. Are you working on that? What do you think? You've been around. What's the matter? What do you feel about what you just said?
Nothing. I want it to come true.
Meaning what?
I just want us all to play together nicely.
Okay. What makes a good improv teacher today?
Somebody who pulls the best out of their students, somebody who gets the best out of what their students can give as opposed to what they want to see.
So you were saying something to me before. You said you were doing a musical class and you sat down. Can you tell us what you told me?
I don't remember.
You sat down and you said, hey, how can we work together, or what can we do together that is fun?
Oh, you mean just before when we were sitting
before,
here?
Just before, yes.
Oh, yeah. So I was working with a really young MD today.
Musical director at Second City.
Musical director at Second City. I hadn't worked with him before. And I went over to him. I was like, hey, you're our MD. I'm Rachel. Nice to meet you. What's your name? Vinny. Oh, yeah, Vinny. So, Vinny, what can I do to facilitate today for you, to make it easier for you? And Vinny looked at me like, fuck. No, nobody's ever asked me. Like, thanks. Thanks. And even like while we were in the process, it's like, the way you work is amazing how everyone works differently. And, Vinny and I decided what the day was going to be like. Like, if he's going to be writing the songs, I want how it's presented to him to be how he likes it. And at the same time, I want to make sure the kids who are pitching aren't just slinging ideas. They're pitching usable ideas. So I think we got like 7 songs in like 3 hours because we were, like cranking it out.
And is that's how you work? You want to, it's a collaboration.
This is art by committee. This is.
Now you're the head of the program at Second City. What do you want to accomplish there?
So at like A, in Second City, it's A through E, right? That's the beginning improv program where it's like, yay, you made a choice. Boner is a location. Yay. And then there's the conservatory. Then there's the conservatory where we want the better choice. We want social and political satire. Right. We want a beginning, middle, and end. And what I say in my program, the advanced improv program, is I want the best choice. I don't want the cops in the cop car. I want the cops shopping for lingerie for their girlfriends. Right? I want content and choice and shine and spit and polish. And we say there are no mistakes in improv. I like to say there are more betterer choices.
Get that down, Wes. Better choices.
And that's what I try to focus on in the advanced improv program. Time-saving shit, like how to start a scene, how to create character, that you don't just emotionally react to the first things. You have to go to create arc. You want to drop context at the beginning of a scene so we can play for the rest of the scene.
Okay, so let's break down those points as we... transition into improv. Mm-hmm. What was the first thing you said?
How to start a scene.
How to start a scene. Tell me how to start a scene.
There are a million ways to start a scene, but you're probably only doing one of 3 things. One, gifting the scene. This is where we are or what we're doing. Show a lot of hot guys at the beach today, Lurleen. Or we are gifting our scene partner. Grandma, you look sad. or we are gifting ourselves, Dad, I am not going back to college. Any of those things are going to be very effective to start a scene.
Okay, so that's one thing. Then what else do we work on?
6 ways to create character. Nobody paid to see you in fucking neutral. So, so let's play characters. And in fact, characters will allow you to say and do things that you wouldn't or shouldn't or couldn't. And in social and political satire, it is important that somebody say the things that nobody could, should, or would say. So there are a couple of ways, like there are a million ways to create character. I found 6 that are very effective. Pick an animal spine, pick an intention, pick an emotion, pick a trope, like a genre character. Bend your spine or pick a total body physicality. That's something like young or old.
Great. And then, so I think we got a lot to start with, don't you? Is there anything else you want to add? Okay. All right, so we're going to do a scene.
I have an idea.
Yes, I'm open for it.
Really?
Yes.
I have a crazy idea.
I'm open for it.
I want to do a bat.
A bat is in the dark?
And more specifically, a radio play.
Okay. So
and more specifically, I want to get a genre.
Okay, so how would that look?
Like in the dark.
Okay, so we would bring the lights down.
Yeah.
Okay, and then, as I'm getting nervous and scared about it. And it's not the improvising, it's the dark part that I'm scared of.
Aww.
Okay, so we...
I figure, like, if this is going to be a podcast, not to shit on you people in the home audience.
No, but just tell people about the bat.
So the bat is simply done in the dark. It's wonderful. When you can't see anything, anything you want can happen. And I love the idea of, like, the radio play,
but
having a little...
they actually did it here in Chicago, right?
Absolutely. It was a full Herald, a half-hour piece, where they would black out the audience. They would turn off every light in the house. So that you had to listen, and it forced the performers to listen to each other.
Okay, so we're gonna do this. We're gonna take the lights down for about 10 minutes,
mm-hmm.
And then you wanted to do it in a genre, and as a radio play.
Right.
Okay, so.
Who's at the door?
Okay, so you wanna do sound effects.
Yes.
Okay, great. So.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry about that.
No,
there's
no,
the
no,
microphone
that's
right
all
there.
Right. Sound effects. And you want to do it as a radio play.
Right.
Okay, great. I don't know where we're going to go with this. It scares the living shit out of me. But
we could do one scene.
No. This is what you want to do. Let's see.
Okay.
All right. And we will we'll call it because the light they can't bring the we're going to have to call
they'll,
it.
They'll have to bring the lights up when we're done.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So, Sam, what are you doing?
First let's get our suggestion. Ladies and gentlemen.
Sam is saying you love it. Okay, so let's.
Oh, I think that means he hates it.
Great. We'll go 8 to 10 minutes. How are we going to start this? We're going to take a suggestion.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have a suggestion of a genre to inspire our radio play.
Noir.
I'm sorry.
Noir.
Fine.
Right.
Boom, 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 boom. Esso presents The Night That Wasn't.
Brought to you by the good people at Chewing Gum.
Jake, where you been? You're drunker than usual, and the phone's been ringing off the hook.
I've been out at Millie's bar.
Jake, you promised me you wouldn't go back there.
Well, I'm sorry, but I'm back on the sauce.
Jake!
You know, the war, it's been hard ever since I've been back.
It's hard for a lot of boys, Jake. You need to get it together.
Millie, I can't. I'm in my cups. I'm in the bag right now. I'm nervous. I'm really nervous.
Get it together!
Ah! Ah! Hit me again, please. You missed the first time. Ah! I deserve that.
Yes, you do. You're not going to ruin this business like you ruins my heart.
Millie, you know I've always loved you.
No, you don't.
I do, too. Remember, here, these letters that I sent you from overseas.
I've read them all.
Millie, I got something for you.
Oh, is it a lead?
Yes.
We got bills to pay.
I know we do. It's a lead. You know Farmer Sam and Brown and Connie?
Yeah.
Well, he needs us to go and repair the roof there on the farm.
You're a detective, not a roofer.
I know, but I'm desperate. I'm drunk when I agree to it.
Oh. Well, you know where your hammer is?
I think so. It's around here somewhere. Here it is. I got it right here. And it still works. Let's do this one for old time's sake. Remember when I first met you? On your father's roof in Iowa?
Do I ever? What's your name?
My name? What do you think it is?
Jake.
You got it. You've been eyeing me for a long time there.
Well, you're the handsomest boy in these parts, and I'm just a tender girl at the age of 16.
Wow. Would you like to go on a date with me?
And here we are.
Millie.
Yeah?
We gotta do this.
All right. We'll pay the bills by hook or crook.
Yes, we will. All right, I've packed our bags. We've got to head to the train now.
All right. Oh, thank you for opening the door.
No problem. I was walking in place before I opened the door.
You're such a gentleman for helping me on with my coat.
There, there's your coat.
Jake?
Yes.
I know the war was hard for you.
It was very hard. There's things in the war that I never told you about.
Jake, get your head down! You're gonna kill us all!
I got shot. I got shot in the arm. Medic, help me.
I'm coming. I got nothing but a belt for you, Jake. Bite down. Here, I'm going to have to saw off whatever that is.
It's my arm.
Okay.
I think this is going to affect me when I get back to the States. I think I'm going to become an alcoholic.
Can you stop drinking?
I just need one to get on the train. I've got the shakes.
You promised.
Just one. Just one. Join me with... Ah! Okay, I'll put the bottle down. Because I love you.
I love you too, goddammit, and I don't know why. You got me.
All aboard! All aboard!
This is it, Jake. We're heading to Broward County together.
I know. Here you go, Mr. Conductor. All aboard, Mac. Thank you.
Care for a shoe shine, mister?
I'd love one. Here you go. Here's a nickel.
Thank you, mister. Bite.
Wow. Millie, my shoes have never looked this good.
Oh, Jake. This is like the first time we took a train together.
Yeah. It was like a honeymoon when I drank that money we were supposed to go to Portugal.
And we ended up in Bayonne. Here we are in Bayonne.
You know what? I may be a drunk, but I still am pretty good with the dream sequences.
You are. You're good at a lot of things.
You know, Millie,
as we've
been on this train for 4 hours,
yeah,
I've been thinking about something.
What?
I think I'm going to quit the drinking.
Oh, Jake.
I mean it this time.
Oh, my heart. I almost believe you.
No, I'm really going to do it. Oh. See this bottle of Jack Daniels?
Yeah.
I'm going to finish it right now. This is going to be the... That really smarts. You know that?
I know. My palms are killing me.
Millie.
Yeah, Jake.
Where did we go wrong?
Oh, gosh.
Besides the drinking, besides me having those two affairs, where did we go wrong? Besides me never bringing home a paycheck, where did we go wrong?
Those are a lot of places that are very good options.
I love you, Millie. I love you more than I've ever loved you when we first got married.
I love you too, Jake.
I want to make this work.
Me too. Oh, my hair. I washed my pillbox.
I love it when you sit on my lap.
But you two separate. Where's your tickets?
Here you go, Mr. Conductor.
Newlyweds, eh?
Thanks. You think so?
Oh, not really.
Look, there you go, Mr. Conductor.
Thank you, Click Click.
He thinks we're in love. I think we can rekindle this.
Oh, so do I, darling.
That's it. I'm not going to drink this time. For the next 24 hours, I'm going to be sober. Ah! I got to tell you something. Part of me really likes it when you hit me.
Me too.
I like it when you hit me in public, and I like you hit me when we're in bed together.
Darling.
What? Let's do it here.
Yes.
Yes. Let's rekindle our love for each other.
Let's join the 60 mile an hour club.
All right. Oh my God, I can't. I thank you because you took me totally out of my comfort zone.
Really?
That was like when I did improv Shakespeare.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I was struggling through the whole thing. You know, I was having fun, but
I think the trick with Shakespeare is just to go slow.
Okay.
And say the thing you mean to say, but like change a word or two. Like, it's a beautiful day to the morrow be grand.
Thank you is so much.
Something
like that. Yay! Yeah. But I love it when you do that, Melly. All right, so how'd you think we did in that?
I thought that was really fun.
What was fun about it?
Getting to be like 9 characters and not have to worry about physicalizing them and making shit happen and the mm-hmm. train noises. Mm-hmm. I love that.
And did we do enough agreement in that?
Yeah.
I felt like we were going back to the same relationship, but do you think that was okay, or we could have explored some other things?
Well, you always know that secretary is in love with the dick, whether she's actually with
right,
him or not.
Right.
So that's, you know.
I totally missed that he was a private detective.
Uh-huh.
And you did a great job of making him a roofer, you know. Which I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah, me too.
And you do characters really well. I struggle with doing characters. How could I have done that character better, do you think?
I don't know. BTJ?
To me,
I'm years behind you. Like, you're one of my heroes. So for you to ask me, what could I do better?
How is one of your
heroes? I watched all your shows.
Okay.
I watched the teams that you were on. Remember, mm-hmm. I was a little kid watching you perform. So to get to do scenes with you is just a joy for me. And for mm-hmm. you to be like, what could I do better? I'm like, I don't know. I thought that was pretty fucking good.
Okay. Are you hard on yourself after a show? Because based on what this little exchange, I get a feeling that you're not.
I am not. Somebody said, and I wish I could remember who I could attribute this quote to, and I learned it later than I would have liked to, is that you cannot beat yourself up for the last shitty scene you were in. It's already gone. And all you can do is head forward into the next scene with, like, renewed purpose. Like, why did that suck? I was low energy. Oh, so I'll be high energy in the next one. But at the same turn, it means the last good scene you were in is already gone, too. So there are no laurels. There is just moving forward in the next scene that's going to happen.
So when you and Susan do a show, what do you guys talk about backstage after the show?
After the show?
You don't get high, do you?
No. No, not at all.
Okay. What do you guys talk about?
Our kids and...
You don't talk anything about the show?
How fun that was. Oh, I love that character. And oh my God, I can't believe the suggestion came back. And Arch's Yeti was awesome. That kind
Ryan
of stuff.
Archibald.
But we're not like that scene should have, bam, yeah, I'm a net. We like that is a pouring energy into a black hole because it's already gone. You can't go back and change it.
So people who are listening to the podcast, people, improv students will say, well, then how do I get better? If I don't
fail
go,
a bunch.
Well, then, okay, that makes a lot of sense. But then how are you learning from those failures? You're saying that by just failing and failing, failing, you're going to figure it out.
You learn
yourself.
When it feels good and when it doesn't feel good. And oh, yeah, this works. What do they say insanity is doing the same thing over and over again,
expecting the same result.
Yeah, right? Like one of those days, like it's going to be a different result. And you're like, oh, shit, I learned a lesson. I once had a student say to me, what do you get from doing the same thing over and over and over again? I was like, asshole, that's what reps are called. Like, you build muscles that way.
And what was he saying then in terms of, like, you doing it the same exercise?
I kept giving him the same line of dialogue to start a scene. And I was like, there's an infinite number of ways to respond to any one line of dialogue. If you think there's one way to respond to any line of dialogue, you are very short-sighted about what improvisation is.
Okay, so let's do this right now.
Okay.
Carol, I'm leaving.
I knew this was coming, Brad.
Carol, I'm leaving.
Dad, get out of my room.
Carol, I'm leaving.
I knew you were fucking the nanny. Okay. I'm keeping the house.
Great. All right, so we're going to take questions and answers from the audience.
Okay.
For you, or
yes.
What we just did.
Great.
So, Sam, great lights. People couldn't see how good the lights were on that podcast.
Yeah.
Because the lights went up. And so we're going to take some questions and from the audience. Joe's here. Hi, Joe.
Hey, Jimmy.
How are you?
Hi, Joe.
How you doing?
Good.
All right. Where do you see the future of your
mic? We're going to ask the question again, Joe, so we have it on the microphone.
All right, cool. Where do you see the future of improvisation, and where do you see yourself in the next 10 years?
So where do you see the future, first of all?
The future of improvisation. I think that the I'm going to make this a bigger question, like entertainment, right? This idea of art. I think that network television is almost dead. I think that the studio system is almost dead. I think the future of improv, comedy, blah, blah, is the internet. I think if you want to put up a show now, like if you have an iPhone, you can make a web series. I think that anyone who wants to can put content out onto the interwebs and get successful from that thing. Mm-hmm. I think that, like, making it, like, sort of democratic, like everyone could have the same shot, is going to change the landscape. It's how the whitest kids you know got famous. It's how Star Kids got famous. Shit, it's how Andy Samberg, what are those kids called? That's how they got famous, right? That's how fucking Justin Bieber got famous, right? By putting a YouTube clip out there. I think people, like, you know, streaming their giggity shows or putting up the teaser to their... Did anyone see the trailer for Arch and Euler's new show that they're doing?
Ryan Archibald and Craig
Google,
Euler.
What's it called? Like a search engine? That trailer is fucking awesome. It makes me so jealous. I want to see that show.
Joe, do we know... Joe's one of our video guys. Do we know who did that trailer?
Joe's there.
And where do I see myself in 10
Joe,
years?
I'm sorry. Dan.
Dan.
Dan, Joe... Joe, and Dan. Dan, do you know? I feel so much shame. I've worked with Dan for how long? And I can't. Almost a year.
You are a terrible person.
I'm terrible person. Have no joy. Wes, name tags next week for everybody. Dan, do we know who did that trailer?
I don't know. I haven't even actually seen it.
It's so good.
It's great.
Okay, it's
the
so
second
good.
Part of Joe's question
Where
was.
Where do I see myself in 10 years? In 10 years, I would hope to be pulling like a Tina Fey and Amy Poehler or a Christopher Guest. That I am at a place where I can take all my friends with me and make what we want to do, like a bunch of what we want to do with like Kubrick control. Like Amy Rachel, you know what I mean? Like he got to do anything he wanted with his friends and buddies. Like, you know, Christopher Guest and those guys made a bunch of movies together. I would love to be at a point where I can like scoop up armloads of friends to make a bunch of shit together.
Great, another question right over here. Okay.
I got the mic.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Rachel. My question was, you deal with advanced improv students. If you could really, and you touched on it specifically earlier, some stuff you work on with them. Mm-hmm. Is there one general note you find yourself just giving people or just things that specifically you could tell overall to work on and things like that?
So the note I usually give is, you are perilously close to the rookie scene. And the rookie scene is like, you know, like the priest confessor scene, as opposed to like spiritual guidance. And that allows me to talk about like playing to the height of your intelligence. Well, playing to the height of your intelligence means your character knows everything you do. You just get to choose whether they share that or not. And that immediately gives like pants-shitting old people depth, right? Or like the terrorist depth, right? I want real people who know the things that you know about the world. So I never have to see the rookie scene again, right? And like you all know the beats of the rookie priest confessor scene, right? Everyone in this room knows what happens in the rookie version of the priest confessor scene. And Frankly, that scene brings a lot of baggage with it because everyone knows what happens in that scene.
What does happen in that scene?
Oh, forgive me, Father. It's been 500 years since my last confession. I'm confessing a big sin for no penance, a little sin for big penance. You molested me. I molested you. We're molesting each other right now. Also, I'm drunk and Irish.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? As opposed to that the forgive me, Father, I have sinned happened like 10 years ago. 10 minutes ago. And I'm the priest who baptized you. I recognized your voice when we sat down, when you opened the screen, right? And now we're talking about trust and honesty, not pedophilia, which is not funny. It is a blight on the church, right? That's a dramatic scene if I ever heard one, right? But the comedy of shared experience of a real, like somebody going to confession because they think it'll help them, I want to see a lot of those scenes. Did I even answer your question?
I think so. Great, we got another question over here.
Hi there.
Hello.
I want to know, I've heard this question being asked, and several women who are in comedy always kind of answer it the same way, which is, I don't want to talk about this, or that's a silly question to keep asking, and it angers me that you do ask it.
You're ruining it. Ask the question.
It's the question, yeah. It's the, like, women in comedy thing. That's what I mean. It's the women in comedy, you know, the Christopher Hitchens thing. Women aren't funny, or do you think women are funny, or what the thing about women in comedy? I feel like it always is addressed as, I don't want to talk about that, or that's ridiculous now, or look at everybody in comedy right now is all women, blah, blah, blah. Do you think that is to say that they're that misogyny or that any sort of sexism is now kind of gone in comedy?
No, misogyny is real. It's just women are now allowed to have the balls to be like, fuck you and your misogyny, instead of, uh-huh. Right? Me and Poehler used to talk about this all the time. Like, when you are the only girl on the team, like, you want to adopt, well, when you're on a team, you want to adopt the playing style of the people you're with, right? And we happen to play with all men, so we get this more fearless style than women are known for, which pisses us off because we're women. Clearly, we can do it, right? Mm-hmm. And to designate, like, women do it this way and men do it this way, to me, is, like, bullshit. Like, we can all do it. So I'll say it this way. It's on the men. I thought we addressed this earlier, but I'll say it again. The reason we don't want to answer that question is because we work too hard to, like, the more we keep talking about it, like, the more it's still a thing. And when we're like, ah, fuck it, it's not a thing, it, like, won't be a thing. So this is my classic example. If a man says to you, honey, is dinner ready? Your job is to say, I don't know. Ask my chief of staff and get out of the Oval Office. Right? He's a douche for calling you honey, but why can't you be honey president, right? We don't have to be like, oh, yay, I'm a woman, right? And if he beats you to it, let's say he beats you to it and is like, you're the best $5 whore I ever had, I'm going to be the fucking best fucking $5 whore you ever had, right? I'm paraphrasing what's her fuck. Eleanor Roosevelt. Nobody makes you the victim but you. Right? Right? If we move forward as women and say we are not the victim, we won't be. Right? Is that too innocent a thing? Thank you, ladies. I don't know if I answered your question.
Yeah. I mean, you did. So you're kind of saying in response, like, it's up to you as a woman to not be a victim, and that if you do have somebody who does want to be an asshole.
Train them.
Well, right, to respond to it almost like in like a fuck you way. Like,
yeah.
Oh, so you want me to be the prostitute? Well, I'm going to be the worst fucking prostitute that
yes.
you've ever seen in your life.
Yes, I'm going to jump in your mouth.
Or like, fuck you back. Like,
yes.
for doing that. That's the way to
yes.
kind of address
I'll yes
it.
And you. You make me $5 whore, I'll yes and you, but not at the expense
the
of
you,
my
not
dignity
the way that
and
you
honor.
Thought you were going to hear
mm-hmm.
it.
Well, what I like you saying is, like, don't come to me and complain that this guy's making me a prop.
Right.
You in the choice you have on stage, you have power to
yes.
to influence.
Yes. Shit, beat him to it if you know he's that asshole. Make him the wife.
Great. We got another question here.
Now, moving after the misogyny thing, you mentioned this at the top of the show as well. You said the next thing that we're all going to have to sort of confront is race.
Mm-hmm.
How do you see that conversation changing when improv, as it currently stands, is a sea of white people?
Not at Second City. Not at Second City at all. I mean, like, Second City started the diversity initiative after the L.A. riots. That's how Second City Detroit got started, because we were like, black people need to say something about what's going on in the world. Andrew Alexander, like, specifically started the outreach and diversity program then. And now we have the Curry Scholarship, and every single one of those kids has a job at Second City now. There is a diverse story to be told. Get over it.
But Second City is making inroads. Are other theaters making inroads?
Yes, they're catching up. They're catching up, absolutely. Kevin Mullaney's new theater, Under the Gun, is super diverse. Dina Fackless, shit, that's a woman right there, mm-hmm. running a place. You have Mike Abdel-Sayed, right, doing One Group Mind. I mean, that's all kinds of different kids mm-hmm. in that program, like the next generation.
Okay, great. We have a question here.
And remember that Second City also has Gay Co, Jew Co, Yellow Co, Brown Co. Like, mm-hmm. Second City wants to put everybody up there.
Yes.
You talked about the future.
Hi,
but hello.
Yeah, is this one of your students?
It's my boyfriend.
We've learned a lot. You're married to Susan, and you have a boyfriend.
Yes.
And you also have a husband and a kid.
Yes.
Okay.
You spend a lot of time as far as understanding the value of the past and education, and you've been doing that with your satire series. And really, because people today, and I know this is a value that they may not know things, that, and why is that valuable, and why should they be educated in that way? And why are you doing these initiatives?
This thing has ruined the reference level.
What do you mean?
I'm swiping an imaginary object works cell phone, everybody. That swiping, like, what is the name of that guy? Immediately looking up and getting the answer, like, there's no recall, right? So I think, like, the reference level we have is very surface, which is why we see the rookie scene. So I think, like, if we go deeper, click the other link, research that name. I don't know who that is, so I'm going to look it up instead of I'm proud of what I don't fucking know. Like, and that's, like, a millennial thing. That's how, like, it's, like, a priding ourselves on we don't give a fuck and I'm proud to not know things. Like theater is about people who care about the world. And if you want to do political and social satire, you need to know about the world and the device and the history. So with the Satire Salon, I'm trying to talk about specifically the comedy that affected the founders of the Second City and how the Second City affected everyone after that. So, you know, in my research and talking with alumni and Sheldon, like, you know, we talk about Brecht and Shakespeare and Punch and Judy and all these great things so that we can see that we're standing on the shoulders of giants, right? Like, the Japanese had forests called Kyogen that are, like, you know, centuries old. Seder plays, like, all we're doing is Seder plays. And those things are thousands of years old, right? I want people to have appreciation for those things. And to go forward, sometimes you got to look backwards, sometimes.
Great. Another question?
Okay, I don't want to ask this, but I must. I'm a big fan.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I'm
it's been fantastic. I'm great, Jimmy. Thank you. So you have Yellow Core, and you have all these wonderful groups at Second City. How about aging improv?
Second
actors?
City just started a what? Group for a class. So it's not only, and Joe can tell you, we have improv for anxiety, improv for autism, and we just started improv for retirees. Anybody can do it. Anybody who wants to. It's not like regular acting where you have to play what mm-hmm. you look like. We can do whatever the hell we want. And if you want to do it, we want you to do it.
Yeah, and older actors, older improv actors.
Yes, older right. improv actors.
Great.
There's a drop-in class. There's an actual class.
Awesome.
It's amazing.
Awesome.
It's not like those young hipster places where, you know, where, what do they call them? Bill Arnett has a great name for it. Sodas. Students over typical age. Right? where they're like, you know, with soda pops, right? Soda pops. It's not like that at Second City. Like, shit, I met the Tobinecks and immediately fell in love with them because they had a reference level and a point of view and a life, and they always raised the bar in every class they were in.
And they're, I mean, they're, you guys, I don't want to give out, how, give me a range of your age.
Oh,
I,
my God.
Are you answering for both of you and your wife or just you? Okay.
Oh my God, I love them.
But I mean, you guys are, I would say, on the older side of improv. And you guys are very active in
it. Jimmy, you're so terrible.
Well, I mean, but I think this is hope for people.
Yes.
You know?
If you want to do it, you can fucking do it.
And when did you guys start? A couple years ago?
4 or 5 years ago.
And you're both retired, right?
Yeah.
Great. And how's it going?
They wrote a show and put it up at the Annoyance. They
Rachel directly fun. The
Annoyance. Why do you like working with older people in improv?
Like I said, they've lived longer lives and know more than me and have experienced more. They have a reference level and an appreciation for, well, shit, for being around.
And as you get older, how is your improv?
I probably have some more skill to match the bravado I had.
I think you still have bravado.
But I have more skill to go with that.
Right.
Like, it used to be a lot of bravado,
right,
and I was learning, and now I still got the bravado and the skill. I got more skill now.
We got to wrap this up. This has just been so much fun.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. What advice, we always end this way, what advice would you give somebody starting out in improv today?
Devour it all. It soak it all in. Do it all. Learn everything, every style, every, take every teacher. Learn from even teachers you don't like. Become a sponge. Stop thinking it's supposed to be something and take what it is in until you know who you are. And that takes a while.
How long did it take you?
I still don't know who the fuck I am. Well, how long did it take me?
Where you knew, like, oh, you know, I'm pretty good at this.
Probably the first time I got asked to do Armando, I was like, oh shit, I must be good. Oh shit,
years,
they want me to play.
How many years was that? And that's.
That was probably 2 or 3 years after I started.
Okay, but you were at the Annoyance, Second City,
and
I.O.
Uh-huh.
So you were taking three.
In my day, you weren't considered well-rounded unless you had taken classes at all three places. So remember I talked about the heart, the head, and the X factor?
Yes.
Right?
So to me,
the Annoyance is the X factor. And the Second City, because no language or subject matter is taboo, any content. And the Second City is the head. Improv is a tool for sketch comedy. And the I.O. is the heart. Standalone pieces of improv that are never be seen again. So, like, if you want a job, you have to be able to do all three things. And if you want to be able to play with everybody, you have to be able to do all of those things. Not just play with the people who play like you in the place you want to play. Like, if you want to make a living, you will get better at the thing that you are not. So you can play anywhere with anyone.
And just so people know, you do that. You Baby Wants Candy, you did musical, you still mm-hmm. do the Second City All-Stars,
mm-hmm.
Which is a short-form game, a mm-hmm. short-form show.
Yeah.
You do Susan's show,
yeah.
The Boys with you guys, which yep. is more of a long-form show. You do it all.
Yeah.
And that's why you're working and making money and hugely successful.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks.
And there you have it. Another episode of Improv Nerd is in the can. And I want to thank our guest, Rachel Mason, for throwing such a curveball at me with that bat. And I had never done that before. I'm scared of the dark, and I'm also scared of the bat, but I love doing old-time radio, even though I was really uncomfortable with that. Again, I want to thank her, and she is the head of the Advanced Improvisational Program at the Second City Training Center. And if you get a chance, study with her. She's an amazing, amazing teacher. Of course, I want to thank our home base, the people who treat us like such rock stars, and that is Stage 773 here in Chicago. Dan Schiffmacher is our producer. Always want to thank him for making this show sound so slick and so professional. You wouldn't be hearing my voice without him. Chloe Fitzpatrick, who is my assistant. And if you want more information about me, Jimmy Corain, and my award-winning classes, Art of Slow Comedy, and my improv blog, please go to my website and sign up for it. I will send you out a wonderful improv blog that will make you a better improviser and a better person. Well, the better person is up to you, but the improv part is definitely, if you read these blogs, I get emails all the time from people saying, hey, I read your blog or I read your book and I did a better show. So they do work. We're also on Feral Audio. We love Feral Audio. It's a podcast collective. So go to feralaudio.com and check out all the hilarious and innovative podcasts out there. As you know, we're taking over social media. We're doing this very slowly, first with Facebook. So go to our Facebook page and like Improv Nerd. It really helps with my low self-esteem. Then follow us. Go over to Twitter, Improv_Nerd, and follow us. And then go to our wonderful YouTube channel, and you'll see videos of actual Improv Nerd shows. I want to thank you for listening, and until next time, remember, walk, don't run.
Hello, I'm Dave Ross.
Hey, and I'm Hampton Yunt.
And we host Suicide Buddies on Starburns Audio.
That's right. It's a podcast about suicide, but not to make light of it. We actually talk about suicidal thoughts, depression, kind of with a sense of levity that Dave and I have with each other. He's my best friend. Come on.
Yeah, we're buddies. Suicide Buddies.
That's the title.
One of our favorite episodes that we've recorded so far is about this guy, Jan Pataki, who was a Polish aristocrat in the 19th century. Mm-hmm. And he, one of the reasons it's possible that he killed himself is that he thought he was a werewolf.
Oh.
Check out a clip. It also makes me think, like, we were talking about in the Norway black metal episode, how, like, just the culture of your surroundings can affect you. Like, yeah. He's in a castle in Poland. He's like, I mean, if you lived in a castle in Poland and no one knew anything about anything, you might be like, I'm a bat. I'm probably a bat.
That's like literally what happened to Batman. He literally is in his mansion. He's like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm a bat.
I'm a bat. I'm a bat.
I'm a
bat that helps people.
I'm a bat that helps people.
I'm a rich...
I don't know what you want from me. And my girlfriend, she's a cat. She's a cat.
My girlfriend's a cat.
She steals things. She's a woman who steals things. She's a cat. I'm a bat.
I'm a bat. I help people. She's a cat. We fight a penguin.
My